Chapter 20. Location: Floyd's truck. Even though Nimbus was not used to confined spaces, he knew he had the patience to remain cool, calm, and hidden until the right moment. He had learned how not to dissipate with his previous assignments and was feeling confident. Yet he tried not to think about the long hours of the trip ahead as he hovered above the big moving van parked out front of a rambling ranch. As Floyd finished up with his paperwork with the Andersons and their household goods and dismissed his helpers to be on their way, Nimbus floated in unnoticed through the open window of the driver's side. Checking out the back compartment of the spacious cab, he saw the little refrigerator, the coffee pot, and the couch that made into a bed. It was like a mini motel. Floyd shook hands with Mr. Anderson at the front door and walked slowly across the lawn, rubbing his chest. As he pulled himself up into the driver's seat, he let out a huge sigh, stuffing the papers back into the Anderson's folder. Nimbus spread out thin and got comfortable. Floyd had been a successful long-distance driver for many years, but his profession was hard on relationships, and he had two divorces to prove it. Most of the truck drivers, who were still logging in miles by the thousands, were a special breed of loners. Many of the old-timers still used CB radios to communicate with each other, since cell phones were more frustrating than helpful. Floyd liked being in the CB world. Each operator had a call name that gave them identity. Floyd's call name was Lone Star. He had always worked as an independent, not wanting to work for any one company. He would pick up shipments here and there, transporting goods from one state to another for different companies. He was still driving his 1988 18-wheeler, Old Betsy. He liked the old-fashioned cab that he slept in. However, Old Betsy was starting to develop some valve trouble, and he was thinking it was time for her to retire. In fact, Floyd decided that this trip to Milwaukee was going to be his last for a while, or maybe forever. He, too, had developed valve trouble and was going in for heart surgery when he finished. The doctor tried to talk him out of taking the trip to Milwaukee, but Floyd needed to keep working because insurance policies were getting complicated and their rates were continuing to go up. Besides, he wanted to see his son. He had put off retirement for 10 years. He was the type that needed to stay busy and not rot away on some couch watching TV. Nor could he see himself greeting customers at the door with a shopping cart. No offense to them, but to him, that would feel like a slow burn over a hot fire, with the flames tickling his dying soul. Besides, he also wanted to see his grandson. Nimbus was able to acclimate after an hour on the road. The music helped. Floyd was listening to a country western station and singing. As long as Floyd kept the windows partially down and opened the refrigerator door every hour or so to get a beverage, Nimbus was fine. In fact, even though there was a partition between Nimbus and Floyd, both seemed to be comfortable and content with one another's unknown company. Floyd finished his soda around the same time that he saw a young man waving his arms at the side of the road about 200 yards away. He looked like a mirage standing on a shimmering pavement. As Floyd pulled down his visor for the glare, he got an instant twinge to pass this hitchhiker by. But when he saw the young man's small backpack and noted his age, the sound of the 18-wheeler engine rattled like a machine gun and slowed to a stop. He rolled down his window the rest of the way as the young man jogged to catch up to the semi. He pulled himself up on the running boards of Floyd's truck.
"Where are you headed?" Floyd asked.
"Pella, near Des Moines. Can I get a ride?" The boy couldn't have been more than 16. He was skinny and dirty and had those long, twisted, straw-colored hair clumps that made Floyd scowl.
"I guess I could use the company. Climb aboard."
"Right, Captain," the young man said. He ran around and jerked open the passenger door, grabbed his pants and the support bar, and hoisted himself up. He jumped into the seat, pulled off his tattered denim backpack, and tossed it to the floor.
"What are those?" Floyd asked, pointing to his hair.
"Skull earrings, solid silver, man.
Just got 'em." "Not those. I know what earrings are. Your hair, or what's left of it."
"Oh, those. Those are dreads, man."
"Dreads, huh? They're dreadful, all right."
Floyd wrinkled up his face, squinting harder than the sun coming into the cab.
"How in the hell did your hair get like that?"
The boy didn't reply, but stared at Floyd. Floyd pulled off his sweat-stained baseball cap, exposing his shiny bald head.
"Do you want to look like this someday, son? If you don't start taking care of that hair of yours, you sure as hell will. What the hell is the matter with you?"
Floyd suddenly realized he was preaching like he used to talk to his own son. He decided to save his breath. Mr. Dreadful appeared to have checked out anyway. Floyd popped his hat back on his head and pushed in the clutch, working the shift bar into gear. The kid just stared at Floyd, then said nonchalantly,
"My name is Jerry."
"Floyd," he answered.
A loud hiss from the released air brakes and the rattle of the engine broke the tension. Jerry kicked his rucksack away from his feet.
"Thanks for the ride, man. It was getting really hot out there."
"Yeah, well, this heat has been building all summer, and of course August would be the hottest. No doubt about that. So roll up the window and I'll turn on the air," Floyd said, going through the rest of the gears, getting the rig up to speed. "What's in Pella?"
"Well, my girlfriend lives there," he said, cranking the window. "I'm trying to stop her from making the mistake of her life by marrying this douchebag."
"Well, how old is she?"
21.
"Ha! Isn't she a bit old for you, son?"
"How old do you think I am?"
16.
"Yeah, right. I'm 20.
"Get out. Must be that hair that makes you look like a kid."
Floyd couldn't let it rest.
"So, when's the wedding?"
"Saturday. I still have time to win her back. We had this falling out a while ago. Then I found out that she was getting married."
Jerry sat back and got comfortable.
"I know she don't want to marry this loser. I think she just wants me to come rescue her."
Nimbus tried to listen to the conversation, but kept dozing off. He was relieved when Floyd turned on the air conditioning. He drifted up to the upper left corner behind the driver's seat partition and reminisced about Esmeralda and Taylor.
"I ain't gonna make a scene or nothing, but when she sees me show up, she'll call it off."
"What makes you think so?"
"All she wanted was to get married. But I told her I needed to make some money first, and she would just have to wait for it."
"Did you make the money?"
"I tried. I hitchhiked to Colorado and got this job as a ski lift operator. It paid pretty good, but guess not good enough, according to her. She thought I was turning into a ski bum. I tried to tell her that the life as a ski operator can be very pricey."
Jerry looked over at Floyd and continued.
"Hey, what can I say? You gotta spend money to fit in. Anyway, a guy's gotta have a little fun before he gets tied down."
"Why didn't she come with you to Colorado?"
Well, her old man, that's why."
"No way would he ever let her come. He's a real, well, let's just say she's afraid of him. Anyway, he don't like me much."
"Well, maybe it's that hair, and maybe it's your grammar."
"No, man. They wanted a college-educated, frickin' rich Republican white boy, which, if you haven't noticed, ain't me."
"Oh, I noticed, all right. With that hair, you do look like a socialist."
"Sick, right. Anyway, you know the old story. Not good enough for Daddy's little girl. He's a jerk, her dad. Couldn't believe I didn't want to go to college. I ain't gonna waste my time busting my ass just to end up as some waiter at some restaurant with a degree and a large debt. I met a bunch of those losers."
Floyd found his sunglasses in one of the door pockets and slid them on.
"Now, if you join the service, there are all sorts of programs for the homeless. You are an American citizen, right?"
"Aw, man, you're just as distorted as Sarah's old man."
Well, it's my age, Jerry. You put that with that dreadful hair, those spooky earrings, dirty fingernails, not to mention your poor grammar. Well, you can't blame me for feeling the way her dad feels, with or without you being homeless. And then you tell me you are going to break up some wedding plans? What the hell's the matter with you, boy?
She don't love him. And I'm telling you, she loves me.
Do you plan to marry her?
No way. But you'll want me over that phony.
How so?
She met this dude in college after I left. I call him Des Moines. He is one of those types who gets money from his daddy, spending the next 5 years in school trying to plan a future. Like he's ever going to need it as long as his daddy pays.
Jerry was getting tense and breaking out in a sweat.
You feeling all right, boy?
Yeah, fine.
Jerry pulled his backpack up on his knees and grabbed a bottle of Coke out of his side pocket. He took a big gulp.
What about you going into the service?
Floyd asked, rubbing his left arm.
If you join the service, you get a free education.
You kidding me, man? Are you talking the army?
Well, when I serve my country, I...
No way, man! You're talking ragheads and desert? No frickin' way! Not until they reinstate the draft and force me like those poor schmucks who went to Vietnam.
I was one of those poor schmucks. I would have finished my second tour if I hadn't gotten dysentery so bad they had to ship me home. But it was a place to grow you up. The military would do you some good, I guarantee it.
Wow, Nom? What a ride!
Oh, it was a ride, all right. I still think the Army would do you some good.
That won't happen. I ain't one of those few good men they're looking for.
That's the Marines, and I'd agree with you on that one. But you could be all you could be if you gave it a shot.
Hey, drop it, okay? It ain't in my cards.
Floyd dropped it. Jerry was silent. Nimbus was drifting in and out of sleep. Floyd's thoughts turned to his son, Ricky, whom he hadn't seen in years. Floyd and his son were different. When Ricky was born, he realized right out of the chute that Ricky was not like him. He took after his mother. She was tall and lanky, artistic and temperamental. Ricky was the same, which made him almost sissy-like. That scared Floyd. He thought the boy would get beat up in school and not be able to stand up for himself. So he tried to make a man out of him by being tough. Maybe too tough. Then on Ricky's 13th birthday, he left with his mother and moved back to her hometown in Racine, Wisconsin. He had to admit his ex-wife's opinion of him wasn't too far off, and since he was on the road most of the time, he didn't see his son much either. Then he found out that his son had a family of his own. Floyd thought he should try and see him and meet his only grandson. He heard that Ricky's wife was very nice. Floyd's attention returned to Jerry, who was getting bored and agitated again. He started exploring the ins and outs of Floyd's truck. He was sweating, despite the air conditioning.
"When did you eat last?" Floyd asked.
"No longer feeling your vibes, man," Jerry said.
Floyd watched the road but caught a glimpse out of the corner of his eye when Jerry flipped open the glove compartment and saw the gun. Like a snake striking, Floyd flipped the door shut with his right hand, almost catching Jerry's fingers.
"Wow, man! I guess you need one of those for protection riding all alone on the road."
"You bet I do, and I know how to use it, being a Vietnam vet and all."
"So, what's behind this partition?"
Jerry leaned around to check it out. Nimbus, who had been dozing, suddenly snapped awake when he heard the glove compartment slam shut. He was already alert to the invasion. Quickly, he stretched out high and as thin as he could across the compartment.
"Wow, this is really cool, man! You can eat and sleep and pick up chicks. A regular rolling motel."
"Yeah, but don't be snooping or you're out on those devil earrings," Floyd said. He was planning on putting the kid out at the next gas stop anyway.
He didn't like the way things were starting to feel, and he tried to always listen to his gut.
Take it easy, man. I'm cool.
Nimbus was wishing for cooler air, and as soon as Jerry turned back around, Nimbus tried to reform back into a cloud as best he could.
You got any money, son? Enough to get you by. It looks like it's been a long time between meals.
Floyd was planning on giving him some money when he turned him out.
Jerry chuckled and sat up straight.
No, but I bet you do.
He jerked open the glove box and grabbed the .357 Magnum before Floyd could react. Leaning against the passenger's door, Ricky pointed the gun at Floyd.
Put it back, Floyd yelled, releasing the foot off the accelerator.
The engine rattled like a machine gun again as he downshifted and the truck slowed.
Relax, man, I'm just looking at it.
Put it back, Floyd yelled again,
downshifting several more times and pulling off the road as the truck rolled to a stop. Nimbus heard the yelling, and then he heard the mention of a gun. The tone of the voice startled him. Suddenly, he became anxious, and seeing the hitchhiker through the space in the partition pointing a gun at Floyd, Nimbus started to change. The more they argued, the more he built. There were rumblings inside of him he was familiar with, and that wasn't good. He kept growing rapidly, darkening fast with a sudden urgency to get out of the truck.
Give me the gun, Jerry!
Floyd knew this kind of kid, who felt that everyone else was to blame for his miserable life. Jerry was a druggie and was coming down and going to take it out on Floyd. He needed to think fast.
Look, man, I do need some money and whatever else you got in here. So relax and just give me your wallet. I know you have travel money.
I only use company credit cards. I doubt I have more than $30 on me, but you're sure welcome to it.
Floyd knew to stay calm and friendly. Nimbus was trying desperately to contain himself, squeezing with all of his might to keep from exploding and flooding the cab. But he was filling the whole compartment with darkness.
Come on, you old fart! You've got more than that, Jerry said, sweating and shaking profusely.
He waved the gun at Floyd.
Give me your frickin' wallet now!
Then he saw Nimbus.
Nimbus flashed like an old-fashioned camera from the 40s. Then a loud crack sounded immediately after the flash. A lightning bolt shot out of him and ricocheted off the rearview mirror, striking Jerry's metal earrings, ripping it out of his left ear right off of his head.
Jerry screamed, dropped the gun, and manhandled the lever to open the passenger door. Grabbing his backpack, he jumped from the truck. He took off running across the desert with blood streaming out of him like red ribbons flying in the breeze. Floyd, thinking Jerry had shot him with a gun, was out of the cab and under the truck before he knew what had happened. The lightning traveled through the cab, acting like the ball of a pinball machine. It bounced off the refrigerator, shattered the coffee pot, struck the metal rim of the front windshield, ricocheted off the rearview mirror before finally releasing its charge out through the back of the van. It left a hole the size of a bowling ball after burning through Floyd's driver's seat, back through Nimbus, and straight through the back of the van full of the Andersons' household belongings. Under extreme pressure, Nimbus shot out through that hole in the truck, suddenly catching up with Jerry. He thundered and flashed and poured all over him until he was empty. Jerry kept running, screaming, flailing his arms and backpack as if a swarm of killer bees were chasing him. Nimbus returned to the truck. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I liked it a lot.
That's not how I ever rehearsed it.
I liked it.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Floyd thought he should try and see him and meet his only grandson. He heard that Fricky's wife, his Fricky.
Fricky's was a tattoo artist, too.